So it is simply awesome to see each other. And let's take a look together. You know, the Gemara speaks about creating connections and maintaining connections through Talmud Torah. Rabbanu Kevin Miftim Rehadadi. To make chama say goodbye to each other, something we spoke about a couple of months ago. To make chama say goodbye to each other, even in the period of the Amram, through Divrei Torah. So we can say hello to each other through Divrei Torah also. And now it's a hello that's, we feel, we're getting to reconnect, yet at the same time, we don't feel as connected socially as we would like to be. We're certainly geographically not connected. But we can enhance our connectedness through coming together to learn. I want to take a look together to the time we have right now at an absolutely intriguing Gemara. This Gemara, you know, encrypted messages and like espionage and you know, spy-like intrigue is not something that we usually associate with Chazal. This Gemara is absolutely intriguing. A small Gemara at the bottom of Gilman Bays, the Gemara tells a story. It almost sounds like an espionage thriller, but starring Atana, starring Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra. And as we're going to see, it's very connected with Pesach, although not the way you expect, because you know that there are 10 prakim in Maseches Pesachim. Prakim 5 through 9 are the kutchim parts. 5 through 9 are the prakim about Karban Pesach, and the other 5 prakim, 1 through 4, and the 10th, Avrei Pesachim, are the non-Kutchin parts. And yet here in Daf Gimel Mevez, we come across a story, an intriguing and a mysterious story about Karban Pesach. And the context really is that, as you know, the Maseches Pesachim runs chronologically. It begins, the last parak gets up to Leila Seder, the beginning of the Masechta is the night before, 24 hours before, Oral Arba Asar, the night of the 14th, the night of Erev Pesach, we have a din drabbanan, a chiyuv drabbanan to engage in bedikas chametz. And then from Davdala and on, the Gemara is going to be involved with the content of that Mishnah, the dinim of bedikas chametz, who does bedikas chametz, how you do bedikas chametz, when you do bedikas chametz, and so on and so forth. But the first two blot, and we're here near the end of the first two blot, are devoted to the opening word, or larba asar. Or larba asar. The light of the 14th, why not say Leil Arba Asa? So the Gemara has a lengthy discussion about it. And Daf Gimel, the Gemara raises the fact that this is a euphemism. That we mean to say night, we mean to say darkness, and euphemistically, we want to say it in a more positive way. So we say Oral Arba Asa, the light of the 14th. And that gets the Gemara launched into a discussion about language, a discussion about speaking properly. The main sugya of Nivel Peh, of being careful to avoid coarse speech, and certainly anything worse than coarse speech. So the main sugya is probably Pesachim Daf Gimel. So near the bottom of Gimel and Beis, the Gemara has a series of stories where sensitivity to language played a role. And it's in that context that the Gemara, sort of a backwards Kalachriyat type of context, the Gemara raises the following absolutely fascinating story. Let's take a look. The story itself is fascinating, and then as we're going to see, Rishonim and Achronim raise a number of halachic questions about this Gemara. Hopefully you'll have a chance to talk about at least some of the approaches to those issues. So let's take a look. Here we are, around 20 lines or 15, 20 lines from the bottom of Gimel Beis. The last word in the line is Hahu. Hahu Arma Davasalik V'achu Pesachim Yishalayim. There was an Arami. Arami Ovid Avi. And that term is certainly a Pesach term. There was an Arami, a non-Jew from Aram, from Syria, Armenia, that area, northeast of Eretz Israel. There was an Arami, Davisalik V'achol Pesachim, Yerushalayim. He would be Ole to Yerushalayim on Erev Pesach, and he would eat Karm Pesach, he would be Mitztarif to a Chabura, and he would eat Karm Pesach. Sounds like a year, 2 years, 3 years. This non-Jew was participating in Karban Pesach. Omar, and then he says, not yet clear to whom he's speaking, but Omar, Ksiv, the Pasuk says, Parshas Bo, Kol Benechel Yochel Bo, a non-Jew is not allowed to eat Karban Pesach. And another Pasuk in Parshas Bo, Kol Arel Yochel Bo, a man without a milah, an arel, is not permitted to consume Karban Pesach. Vana, and here am I, I'm both. I'm a nachri and I'm an arel. And I get to eat from the. Not only do I eat Karban Pesach, I'm eating mishufre shufre. Shufra means yafe in Aramaic. So he's eating the finest cuts of meat. I'm a part of a chabura, and they give me the choicest cuts. So he's bragging to someone. Who's he bragging to? So we learn in the next line. Amar Lei Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira. The Tana Yehuda ben Beseira responds to him. Fascinating. To try to imagine this scenario. Here you have this Nachri, who's speaking with one of the greatest Talmid Chacham of the generation, and bragging to him, "You Jews, you think you have standards, you ain't got nothing. I got through, no one asked me for ID, and I've been eating Karban Pesach, in violation of your psukim, in violation of your standards. Ha! What's Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira going to do? What's Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira going to do? I'm going to let Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, now what would we expect him to do? I don't know. Maybe say, don't. Please don't. What are you doing? Back off. Something. I don't know. What should he do? So instead, he engages him in what strikes us initially as sort of totally from left field. He says, really? Sort of like picks up on Adita. They're giving the best meat? You sure about that? Mika safa lach me'alya? Are they serving you the tail? Which is a particularly juicy part of the lamb. Amar lei lo. He says, well, no, actually. So Yehuda ben Beseira says, Kisalkas lahasam, next time you go to Yerushalayim, you make sure, Eima lehu sfuli me'alya. You make sure to demand the tail. So Rashi explains that Yehuda ben Beseira is sort of pushing back. You're taunting me? You think that you fooled them all and they're giving you the best cuts of meat? Yehuda ben Beseira says, no, they're on to you. I'll prove it to you. They're not giving the tail. They told you they're giving you the best meat. But they're not giving you the tail. They're keeping it for themselves. Obviously, they are on to you. That's why they're only giving you, the shvach meat. And the Nachri takes him up on the dare. Kisalik, Amar Lahu, Ma'alus Fuli. The next Chodesh Nisan, the Nachri travels Yerushalayim again, and he demands of the Chabura, Ma'alus Fuli, feed me from the tail. Amrulay, they say to him, Aliyah legavoa salaka. What are you talking about? Now, Aliyah, when you bring a passing last week's parsha, Rashi quotes, when you bring a keves, when you bring a sheep as a carbon, hey Daniel, when you bring a sheep as a carbon, so the din is that the Aliyah is part of the emurim. When you ever have almost every carbon, with the exception of a carbon ola, almost every carbon is divided into the part that's incinerated on the Mizbech and the part that's eaten by people. The Basar is eaten by people, and the term for what's burnt on the Mizbech is the Emurin. So the Torah tells us in last week's Parsha that if you're bringing a Keves as a carbon, so the Alya, the tail, will be part of the Emurin. The Nachri didn't know that because he hadn't learned Chumash. The Jews in the Chabura all did know that. And they knew that was, again, for us, this is all arcane because we didn't bring karbanos. Remember, for Jews in the time of Beis HaMikdash, the ins and outs of karbanos, the practical aspects of karbanos, that was like milchus and fleishiks for us. That was like sosmar kriyashman, shki and seis. That was, every observant Jew has a certain basics down. So this fellow comes, they've been eating karban pesach with him for the last couple of years, and suddenly, out of the blue, he demands an aliyah. It's like asking for a piece of bacon. It's like asking, can I have some butter on my karban pesach? Like, what are you talking about? The aliyah is treif. The aliyah goes in the mizbech. We don't eat the aliyah. Where'd you fall from? So he says to them, they must have asked him, to take a look. The Amar Lei Aliyah Legavoa Salka. The aliyah goes on the mizbech. And then they speak again. He must have pushed back. And he's insisting. They're trying to figure out, what's going on here? Why are you being so insistent? Again, for the equivalent for us is a fellow shows up and he wants butter to put on the flesh. And he insists, no, I have to have butter. What are you talking about? Everyone knows, bas b'chalav is treif. So they're saying to him, everyone knows, aliyah of a keves, you can't eat that by carbon. So they asked him, man, amar lachachi, who gave you this jukba moach? why are you so caught up? You have to have the tail. So he said, no, a great rabbi. Which great rabbi told you? Come on. Hey, which great rabbi told you to dip the, to have a butter-based cream sauce on your steak? So he says to them, Ruben Becerra. Oh, it was the Tanya of Ruben Becerra. He told me to ask for the tail. Well, they say, Amru, that's no longer, you'll notice, it's not Amru Le, they're not saying to him. Amru, they said to each other, my high de Kaman. What's going on here? Mazel lefaninu. Something's going on. He claims that Ruben Becerra told him to violate a pasuk in Chumash. Something's fishy. They got the hint. Badku Basrei, they investigated his antecedents. They looked into his background. Ashkehu Darmahu. And they discovered, now that they looked into it, they discovered that he was an imposter. They discovered, although he had been presenting himself as a Jew, and that's how he got into this chabur in the first place. In fact, the whole thing was made up. In fact, he was a Nachri. And what did they do? They killed him. Yikes. That seems pretty severe. Capital punishment. And then, so that's the end of the story. So Ruben Becerra saw a problem, and he wasn't able to apparently take care of it on his own, so he needed to send a coded message to Yerushalayim. But how's he going to send a coded message to Yerushalayim? How's that going to work? How are they going to know? He's going to send a letter to Yerushalayim to Sanhedrin? By the way, there's a fellow who's showing up, and he's really a Nachri. Oh, there are 50,000 people, 500,000 people showing up for Karm Pesach. How are you going to pick out the one who is an imposter? So Ruben Becerra, you think about what's going on in this story. Brilliant. On the spot. Right? This Nachri is bragging to Ruben Becerra. And if he would have pushed back in a typical way, it would have been the end of it. He said, no, you shouldn't. Shkayach. The Nachri is going to listen to Ruben Becerra? No. Ruben Becerra realized the only way to send a message to Yerushalayim that will work is to somehow get the Nachri himself to deliver the message. Right? But how's he going to do that? So he realizes he's going to have to play both on his awareness of the Nachri's lack of knowledge and on his psychological, his emotional, Ruben Becerra's emotional intelligence and recognizing what he can use to motivate the Nachri. Because the Nachri is bragging and there's ego here. So he figured, I can play with his ego, I can push back and motivate him to want to say it. Right? Because basically, I'm daring him to, I'm calling his bluff, I'm daring him to ask for Aliyah. And Ruben Becerra, you think about it, Ruben Becerra didn't know what was going to happen. Right? There's a shot in the dark. Maybe I can solve the problem. Hold on one moment. Let me just plug in the computer. All right. No. Okay, we're back. So Ruben Becerra, he needs to send the message. He plays on the Nachri's bravado, on his ego, and it works. It works. For Ruben Becerra, it was a shot in the dark. Maybe it'll help. So they want to tell him, the Jews of Yerushalayim want to let Ruben Becerra know that what you did worked. So they send him a letter. Shalchalei Ruben Becerra. They send him a letter. Shalom lach Ruben Becerra. Shalom Alecha, Ruben Becerra, and here's the core of the message. Five words. At ben etzivin, mutudascha prusi b'Yerushalayim. You're sitting out there in etzivin, far, far away from Yerushalayim, but your net reaches all the way to Yerushalayim. You're out there in etzivin. The Gemara tells Sanhedrin that was the city where Ruben Becerra was a Rav, but your net reaches all the way to Yerushalayim. You managed to snag him from a distance. Incredible. Incredible. Fascinating story. Fascinating. Brilliant. And the sense of, again, the theme of Psachim Dav Gimel, the sensitivity to language. And he managed to set up the Nachri to say something that the Nachri didn't even realize he was thereby giving himself away. Anything bother you, though, about this story? Feel free to speak up. Feel free to put in the chat. Whatever you like. This is not room 104, so you can even spread your, stick your elbows out, raise your hands. Yeah. Wow, so one question, why'd they kill him? It seems pretty severe. What did he do wrong? I mean, they could have told him, you're not invited back. We can't give you Karban Pesach anymore. That was nasty. But to kill him, it seems a little severe. You know, what crime did he do at all? What was the Aveira? An Aveira that carries with it such a severe penalty. Yeah, that's one problem. Why were they killing him? What else? Oh, why did you remember Sarah not showing up to Yerushalayim? Why did you remember Sarah not showing up to Yerushalayim? And I'll throw one more question. If you go back to the Amud, the question that Natal just asked, why is Reuven Sarah himself? Why do you have to stay in Etzivan and go fishing? You know, cast his line, cast his net to Yerushalayim. He should have been coming to Yerushalayim too. He was also Jewish. He was Jewish, Reuven Sarah. So he was Mechayv in Karban Pesach. And the Nachri went for Karban Pesach, Reuven Sarah stayed home. What's going on? So that's the question that this Tosas Me'alya raises. The previous Tosas raises a question. Clearly, it was discoverable that this fellow was an imposter, because when they did look into it, and once Reuven Sarah tipped them off, when they looked into it, they discovered that, in fact, he wasn't Jewish. So they were able to do enough research in Yerushalayim to figure this out. So Tosas points out, it's interesting they never looked into it beforehand. Why they needed Reuven and Mesera to tip them off. And the first Tosas, Va'ana, gets into a discussion, a Nemanah's question. If I say, you've never met me before, and I claim to be a Jew, am I Neman to say that I'm a Jew? A little bit of a logical conundrum there. And once I'm determined to be a Jew, so then I have a certain Cheskas Kashrus. But can I self-identify as a Jew? Or do you need external evidence, someone you never met, that he's Jewish? That's a question that Tosas raises based on what Tom writes about, Sefer Yashar. Different Yishon with different approaches. Maybe, yes, you are believed to say you're a Jew, and Rabbi Tom thinks our Gemara is a Raya, or maybe our Gemara is not such a Raya because there's a Rov. Should be a familiar sounding concept. Right. Most people in Yerushalayim on Erev Pesach, certainly most people who are trying to eat Karban Pesach on Erev Pesach, are Jewish. So, okay. So again, let's organize like that. Question number one is, these Jews in Yerushalayim, why did they initially believe him? Question number two was raised before, and it's a question of the Minchas Chinuch. Once they discovered that he was an imposter, so throw him out, yes, but kill him. What sin did he commit? What aver did he commit? And question number three is a question of the Bottom Tosas. Reuven Sarah, where was he? Why wasn't he coming to Yerushalayim? So the truth is, each of these questions has the specific answers. Like we saw, the first question about the Nemanus. So Tosar A raises different possibilities. Maybe we do believe a person say he's a Jew, or maybe here there was a Rov. The question of the Minchas Chinuch, it's, I believe, in Mitzvah Yudalad, in Parshas Bo, the Easter of the Karban Pesach with the Nachri, so he points out there's an interesting machlokas Rishonim, whose Isser is it? He points out Rov Rishonim assumed that that's an Isser for us. Jews are not allowed to feed, Jews are not allowed to share Karban Pesach with the Nachri. That's the language of the Chinuch, the language of the Rambam, and the footnotes they point out that Tosa Rush comes to that conclusion, but the Smag, Moshe Mikutzi, the Sefer Mitzvah's Gadol, so the Minchas Chinuch points out that the Smag seemed to think it's actually an aver for the Nachri. A Nachri, he phrased it not as Shalol Ha'achil, but Shalol Ha'achol. And the Nachri is forbidden to eat Karban Pesach. So then he says, look, so Minchas Chinuch, in classic Minchas Chinuch, Harifistika style, he says, oh, according to the Smag, there are two things which are not kosher for Goyim, Aver Menachai and Karban Pesach. He says maybe it sort of falls under the rubric of Karban Pesach. Maybe it's part of Shev Mitzvah Bnei Noach, and therefore the Chiyuv Misa. Okay, that's quite a chiddush. And then Michal Chinuch has another couple of suggestions. Particularly, he says Gezel is one of the Shev Mitzvah Bnei Noach, and two types of Gezel. Number one, he stole from these Jews. Right? He bought something under false pretenses. He advertised himself as a Jew, and they only sold him a chelik of the Karban Pesach because of that false pretense. Alternatively, the Michal Chinuch says, and here's where the real charifus says, maybe it's Gezel from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There is the Gemara has language that when you eat a carbon, it's Mishulchan Gavoa Kazachu. You're being Zocha from the table of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, really, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's meat, and he's allowing you to share in his meat. And in Machlok, as we've shown him, Rashi holds it applies even to Kachem Kalam, like a Karban Pesach. Even to the Chelek HaYisrael. So Rashi would assume that Mishulchan Gavoa Kazach applies even to the Besar HaPesach. So as Minchas Chinuch says, maybe it's Gezel of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So again, question number one, how come they believed him initially? Either because in Achanami, a person is believed to say Yisraelani, or because there was a rogue. Question number two, how come when they discovered that he was an imposter, what chet did he commit? Specifically, what chet did he commit that's so severe that chayv misa? So either you take the approach of the smag, that Karban Pesach is treif for nachrim, that's a nachriz iser to eat Karban Pesach, so it somehow falls, maybe as Michal Chinuch says, under the rubric of Eivir Menachai. It's an extension of Eivir Menachai. Or you say that perhaps it's Gezel. Either Gezel from the people, the other members of the Chabura, Gezel from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Mishulchan Gavoa, Kazachu. Okay. But anyway, you slice it. The reaction is certainly striking. Uktaluhu. And the third question is, where was Reuven ben Bisera? Why didn't he come to Beis HaMikdash? So that's that I mentioned that Tosas Dir Masal Me'alia talks about that. The Tosas has two solutions, and both are difficult. The first one he says is, well, Reuven ben Bisera may have been a very old man. If you're too old to walk up Harabayas with your own two feet, then you're patur from Aliyah L'Regel. So Tosas says, well, maybe you're therefore also patur from Karban Pesach. So the it's not often that the Mishnah Lamelech is quoted on the page of the Gemara, but here he is. That note to the Mesoros HaShas. Mesoros HaShas says, why? Quotes the Mishnah Lamelech, beginning of Hilchos Karban Pesach. He says, what? Just because you're patur from Aliyah L'Regel, you're patur from Karban Pesach? Half of the Jewish population, half of Am Yisrael is patur from Aliyah L'Regel, but chayav from Karban Pesach. To which half do I refer, Rabbi Ozai? Exactly, the female half. And women are pturas from Aliyah L'Regel, Baruch Hayavus and Karban Pesach. So a woman doesn't have to travel to Jerusalem for Shavuos or Sukkos, even Pesach time. She's not mechuyev to appear in Beis HaMikdash. Certainly on Pesach, but Leil HaSeder, she needs to eat Karban Pesach. So just because you're pater from Aliyah L'Regel, doesn't automatically follow you're pater from Karban Pesach. So Mishnah Melech is very upset. He says, oh, Tosas' first answer. Well, maybe he was so old, so that's why he's pater from Pesach, just like he's pater from Re'iyah. That's a surprising answer. And Tosas has another surprising answer. Inami Nitzivin Chutzlaretz. The other answer is, Nitzivin. We know the Yehuda Maseir is in Nitzivin. The Tosas says, I can prove to you that Nitzivin is in Chutzlaretz. He has a Sifrei, Medrash Halacha on Sefer Devarim that says that. He has a Targum in Parshas Noach. Translates Akkad as Netzivan. If you look at a map, could be online or a good old-fashioned paper map, there is a city that is in modern times located on the Syria-Turkey border. I think it's around 500 miles or so northeast of Yerushalayim, called Nusaybin, Nusaybin. Nusaybin, that is probably Netzivan. Netzivan is in Chutzlaretz. It's even in Chutzlaretz. The Sefrei says it, the Targum says it, and you can find on a map, it's in Chutzlaretz. What's missing from Tosas' answer? What's missing, Rabbi Osir, from Tosas' answer? Exactly, who cares? Okay, so it's Chutzlaretz. Ah, exactly. has the answer the question. So apparently Tosfos is assuming that Karban Pesach does not apply to Jews who live in Chutz Laretz, or at least it's not a chiyuv for Jews who live in Chutz Laretz. So I want to do, in the time, the couple of minutes that remain, I want to point you in two different directions with this. Fascinating story. Three kashas. Multiple terutzim to each of the three kashas. So let's do two things. Let's very briefly talk about the last teretz we just touched on. And then I want to share with you an insight of the Maariv Chayis that allows us to answer all of these questions in one, as well as others, in one fell swoop. So first, this closing teretz of Tosfos, that maybe the reason why Yehuda ben Seiru was pater from Karban Pesach is because he lived in Netziv, he lived in the Chutz Laretz, and apparently Tosfos is assuming that the Karban Pesach is only a chiyuv on Jews who live in Eretz Yisrael. So what would that mean, and where would it come from? So you may remember last year, in Chodesh Iyar, in preparation for Yom HaTzimut, we had the chance to talk about Rav Shechter's approach, the seven dinim, seven halachic aspects of Eretz Yisrael. And one of them was that Eretz Yisrael is the Iker Makram Tziruf HaKlal. Eretz Yisrael is the Mitzarif of Klal Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is our halachic national homeland. And that explained, we discussed last year, that explained why the even though the Mishnah in Kiddushin Daf Lamed Vav says that the agricultural mitzvahs only apply in Eretz Yisrael, mitzvah tulias ba'aretz don't apply in Eretz Yisrael, but other mitzvahs apply all over the world. There are a number of exceptions, like giving smicha, like kiddush hachodesh l'sechatchila. And there are others as well. A parhelm davar shel tzibur. You want to know if rov hatzibur violated chiyav karis peshogi, based on Psak of Sanhedrin. If Rov HaTzibur violates, then it's the Chet HaTzibur, Ruba Kukulo, and you bring a single Parha Elm Davar Shel Tzibur instead of each person bringing an individual Chatas Yachid. So how do you know whether it's Chet HaTzibur or not? Rov. Rov of whom? The Gemara in Hari says, Rov of the Jews who live in Eretz Yisrael. Why? The Gemara says, because they are Ikri Kahal. Hari Yisdav Gilman Beis. The Jews in Eretz Yisrael are called Kahal, meaning Jews all over the world are equally, personally, Jewish. You did not lose any Kedushas Yisrael when you got on a plane and flew back to the United States. Absolutely not. Your Kedushas Yisrael is identical no matter where you are in the world. Your personal Kedushas Yisrael. What does change is your membership in Klal Yisrael. The degree to which you're connected to the corporate entity, the degree to which you're a citizen of the Jewish nation, so that's only b'milua, that's only in its fullness, when you're on the land, which is the glue. That's what he means by Eretz Yisrael being a national homeland. It's not just a secular concept drawn from 19th century European nationalism. This is a halachic concept. This is a din d'oraisa. Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah for us into a klal. When I'm not in Eretz Yisrael, I'm personally just as Jewish, but I'm not as fully plugged into the tzibur. So that's why Toshav Chutz Laretz are not counted in assessing whether this was a chet tzibur for Parah Darvish tzibur. That's why Kiddush HaChodesh, which is it's not a personal matter, it's a national matter. The luach is for the nation. Smicha is also for the nation. And there are multiple rayas for that. So it could be Tosfos is saying that Karban Pesach is also a national mitzvah. It's a Karban Yachid. Every Jew has an individual obligation to participate. But after all, the Sefer HaChinuch on this mitzvah, Yudalit, says, how come Nachrim aren't allowed to eat Karban Pesach? Or how come we're not allowed to provide Karban Pesach and Nachrim? Because Pesach is a celebration of the relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael. So it's wholly inappropriate for someone who's not part of that bris to be partaking. So there you go. So Tosfos says, Im Kain, it has aspects of Tzibur, so it's only the Chiv only devolves on a Jew who lives in Eretz Yisrael. A Chiddush, but a Chiddush that we can understand the Svara behind it. Okay. So now we have multiple Kashas. How come the Jews in Yerushalayim initially believed him on his own say-so? How come subsequently when they discovered he was an imposter, they saw that as an incredible crime, the Chiv Misa? And finally, how come Yehuda ben Seiru, ironically, is not himself? coming for carbon, for Lila Regal, for carbon Pesach. And again, multiple answers to each question. I want to leave you with an absolutely fascinating insight of the Maros Chayes. I think alludes to it a little bit in his Hagos in the back. The Maros Chayes' name should at least be familiar. He is the Achron who typically appears right after the Rashash in the back of the Gemara. So here he tells you that he has what to say about this. I can share with you actually through the chat if you want to see. It's really incredible. He has this in several of his svarim, including in the Tshuvas. Tshuvas are the easiest to find. In the Tshuvas Maros Chayes, let's bring it up here. There you go. The Tshuvas of the Maros Chayes. It's a long Siman Beis. The end of Siman Beis, he addresses himself to this Gemara. And he develops a fascinating theory. He quotes Gemara after Gemara after Gemara, where you have Tanaim, who are speaking very practically about Karbanos, Shaios by Aliyah Regel, Shaios by Karban Pesach, even though they live long after the Churban HaBayis. Give you one simple example. He quotes in Darim Daf Chav Gimel. The Tanur Reb Yossi is presented with a Shaila. A fellow comes, a Balbas comes to Reb Yossi, that he was a Madir, he imposed a Neder on his wife, and now it's going to get in the way of being Ola Regel. So what's the story? Did Niatar Sadarm? He's not Niatar Sadarm. A practical Lachal Maisa Shaila and Ali Ola Regel, even though Reb Yossi was a student of Reb Akiva. This is at least a century after Churban HaBayis. We have Ali Ola Regel. What are you talking about? He points out Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Yud Gimel, where Rabban Gamliel sends a letter to Chutz La'aretz explaining why he was Ma'abra the Shana. One of the rationales is because the sheep are still very small and young, we need to give them another month to grow. Another month to grow. I mean, for Karban Pesach. They're too young for Karban Pesach. But Maros Chayes says, if you look at the Gemara, there were multiple Rabban Gamliels, a grandfather, a grandson. But the one we're talking about there is the one who was in Yavne, who was impeached in the Gemara and Brachas. He lived after the Churban Bayis. He was in Yavne. So what's going on? And he has more rises. I just gave you two. He has a slew of rises. The Jews were bringing Karbanos, Karban Pesach, Aliyah LeRegel, after the Churban Bayis. Now, the mission at the end of Adios tells us that Tanur Reb Yeshua says that the Kedushas Makom of Mikdash persisted even when the building was destroyed. The Kitchel Shaita Vikitchel Asadlavo. Makriven, therefore, Yeshua says, Makriven Afa Bishayim Bayis. You can be Makim Karbanos, at least in principle, even if you don't have the walls there. You have to have Mizbeach, but you don't have to have the walls. So Maros Chayes says, apparently, that was not just a theoretical possibility. That wasn't a hypothetical. That was actually happening. He says he has external Mada proof as well. After he quotes 10, 15, 20 Gemaras, he says, and by the way, if you're a student of legal history and you study the Justinian Code, one of the last significant Roman code of law, a couple of centuries after the Churban Bayis, there's a passage, there's a section that deals with Karban Pesach. There's a line in the Justinian Code that forbids Jews from bringing the Karban Pesach on the 14th of Nisan, and very severe penalties for Jews who violate this. So you're right, very fascinating. Maros Chayes writes that contemporary historians were very bothered. It's an anachronism. There hadn't been Karban Pesach in centuries. Why is there language in the Justinian Code about Karban Pesach? It says in Maros Chayes, I can be miyashev that historical kasha. The answer is, apparently, and there were some Jews who were still sneaking onto Har HaBayis every year of Pesach, Yimakom, Karban Pesach. They remained Tahar. The Gemara tells us that they had paraduma ashes for centuries after the Churban Bayis. They remained Tahar. They knew where to go. Their parents would probably sneak on, seek to evade Roman detection. Now, Maros Chayes says, let me give you one more kasha and the answer to everything. The one more kasha, the kasha that I believe Tosfos in Menachos raises, which is kasha number four, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, the Gemara says elsewhere, seemed to have been a contemporary of Yehuda Hanasi. The Gemara speaks about Yehuda ben Beseira in conversation with Avua de Shmuel, with Shmuel's father. That's Whereas here, Rehum ben Beseira is alive during the Zman HaBayis. So what's going on? Did Rehum ben Beseira live for an except for a couple of centuries? Maybe. Were there more than one Tana named Rehum ben Beseira? Maybe. Says the Maariv Chayis, I have one answer that answers all four questions. He says the answer is, this story happened after the Churban Bayis. He says, I demonstrate to you that the word Jews bring Korban Pesach after the Churban Bayis. Even after the Bar Kochba revolt and the Hadrianic persecution became very, very dangerous all the way through the period of the Justinian Code, there were at least some Jews who were heroically great risks sneaking onto Har HaBayis on Erev Pesach to Makriv Korban Pesach. So the Maariv Chayis says, all the questions fall into place now. Think about it. Why did they... The first question of Tosfos, how come they believed him initially? How come they didn't do any research? There was no Sanhedrin. This was a group of Jews that were sneaking on together. Oh, they're all risking their lives. They should think that he's not Jewish. And then there was no Sanhedrin overseeing anything anyways. Question number two. Let's skip question number two for a moment. Question number three. Why isn't Rehum ben Beseira himself coming for Karban Pesach? It's hard to argue this was a chiyuv, and certainly it probably wasn't even a possibility if you weren't a young, agile person who could quickly run in and run out. This was not for the faint of heart. It was not for the slow of foot either. This wasn't an option for Rehum ben Beseira. It certainly wasn't a chiyuv. And are there two Rehum ben Beseiras? No, there's only one. This is the one who was a contemporary of Huad Shmuel Rehum ben Asi, who was having this conversation with this Nachri about the surreptitious Korban Pesach that he had been a part of. And now we come back to question number two, the Minchas Chinas question. What was the crime for which he was Chayiv Misa? Was it the Iser for a Nachri to eat Korban Pesach, subsumed perhaps under the rubric of Eiver Menachai? Was it some form of Gezel or another, either Gezel Hedyot or Gezel Gavoa? Says Maariv Chayis, it's very simple. They realized that he was a plant. They realized that this was a Roman sting operation. That he was a Nachri who had infiltrated the group of Jews who were surreptitiously bringing Karim Pesach. And he was, it was Habala Hargo, Hashkim Lahargo. This was dangerous. They're going to turn him over. He's going to turn them over to the Romans. He's probably doing it for a couple of years to sort of work out get to know the whole group, and then he's going to turn them all in. And they'll all be murdered brutally by the Romans. That was a time of religious persecution. That was a time when out of hate, out of malice, the Romans were killing Jews who tried to keep mitzvahs. So Rehum ben Beseira understood that this is a very, very severe problem. This is a very risky situation. The Jews of Yerushalayim, this subset of Jews of Yerushalayim who are bringing Karban Pesach, they're in moral danger. But what's he going to do? So the only way was to send a coded message with the spy himself. This is like the ultimate counter-espionage. Rehum ben Beseira plays upon the spy, and the spy, unbeknownst to himself, is conveying a coded message that the other Jews could decode and understand and use to identify that there's a spy in their midst. And by the way, we'll close with this. The Gemara is talking about sensitivity to language. Remember, as I said before, that's the overall context of Daf Beis, Daf Gimel, particularly Daf Gimel, and that's why this is being raised here. What? So where's the sensitivity to language in this story? So number one, you say, well, it's the message that Rehum ben Beseira fooled the Arami into conveying. Yes. There's also another very, very subtle message. The closing line, the Gemara took pains to tell us about the letter that gets sent back to Netzivan. What's with that letter? Why so cryptic? Well, now you understand why it was so cryptic. If they were sent an open letter, thank you, Rehum ben Beseira, for identifying him, they'd all be in danger. He would be in danger, they would be in danger. So the only solution was to send another encoded message. Because they realized Rehum ben Beseira had this conversation with an Achri months ago, maybe a year ago. It could be it was right after Pesach last year. And he is shot in the dark. Maybe he can do something. And he had no idea if it was going to work or not. He had no idea where things were going to go. He knew how uncertain things were. They want him to know, Hitzlachta. So they send him a message that only he would understand. At b'netzivim, v'rishcha prusa b'yushalayim. So he was able to accomplish in ways that he didn't know if it would work. And they told him, you're accomplishing remotely. And this is the original Zoom conference, is this Gemara. Right? He was hundreds of miles away, hundreds of miles in the northeast, way far out in Netzivan, and he's managing, he's sending messages remotely through the cloud to the Jews in Eretz Israel, to the Jews in Yerushalayim. And they told him, you should know it worked. You should know it worked. You're far away, but you're right here. From a great, great distance, you were taking care of us, and Taka, it worked. I leave you with a thought, but first we'll answer a question. Because Noah Meyerfeld had sent in a question, a good kasha, why is a spy bragging to Yerubim Mzera? So, Lahavdal Alfi Avdalas, in many fictional spy novels, there's that moment where the villain, starts to brag about his whole plan to other protagonists, and because he brags, he ends up getting caught. Right? Apparently, this happens in real life also sometimes. Why was he bragging? Yehudim Abisera the Arami would never have imagined that Yehudim Abisera could succeed in tripping him up. He thought he was totally safe. He was also a Balgaiva. So the story speaks to the dangers of Gaiva. The story speaks to the value of knowing Torah and the value that the Torah places on sensitive, careful use of language. The story also speaks to the connectedness of Klal Yisrael and to anywhere we began, to the fact that they were connected through Torah. The Rebbe of Seir and the Jews in Yerushalayim, they were hundreds of miles away, but they shared a language. They shared the language of Torah. And the Torah is what was mechaber them. The Torah was what enabled Yehudim B'Vaseira to communicate in ways that no one else could make sense. And that image of Yehudim B'Vaseira taking care of things from a distance, I'm thinking a lot about the acting from a distance these days. So I leave the following insight I've heard from Ashechter a number of times. That the Psukim at the end of Chumash describe there'll be times in Jewish history of Hester Panim. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu hides his face. Anochi hastir astir panai b'yom ahu. There'll be times in Jewish history when HaKadosh Baruch Hu hides his face. And that could be scary. That could be legitimately very scary. You know, what's going on nowadays is scary. There have been times in history when things have been even far, far, far scarier. And yet, there's a pasuk in Shir Shirim where Shlomo HaMalach explains how to understand that turn of phrase. Hester Panam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was hiding his face. So the pasuk says in Shir Shirim, Tehine Zeh Omeid Achar Kosleinu, hopefully we'll have a chance to say this maybe tonight. Oh, Rabbi Shenker, Shalom Aleichem, welcome. It's a kavod to have you here. So a pasuk, maybe even say it tonight. Maybe wait till Matzah Shabbos. But the Kiddush Levana, Hine Zeh Omeid Achar Kosleinu, Mashkiach Menachalanos Mitzis Menacharakim. Pasuk Yenda Shir Hashirim. The girl describing her boyfriend, Klal Yisrael describing HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Mashkiach Menachalanos Mitzis Menacharakim. He's looking out the windows, and he's peeking through the cracks. What's the significance of those two descriptions? Both are that he's watching me. The difference is that if he's watching her from the window, so he's watching her, he sees her, and she sees him, and she sees that he sees her. Right? You're looking out the window, everyone can see that you're looking out the window. If you're looking through the peephole, if you're peeking through a crack, if you're Metzis Menacharakim, so the boy sees her, but she can't see him. And she can't tell that he sees her. She can't tell that he's watching, that he's taking care. When the Torah describes, Moshe Rabbeinu writes the end of Chumash, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, tell the Jewish people, Anochi astir astir panai, it's going to be Hester Panim. So the Nishama Melech is telling us, Hester Panim doesn't mean this. Hester Panim means this. Hester Panim doesn't mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't see us. Not that he covers his, so to speak, covers his face opaquely, and he shuts his eyes. Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't sleep, but Kadosh Baruch Hu is always taking care. Hester Pana means he's going to hide his face. He's still peeking through the cracks, but he's only Metzis Minacharak, he's not Mashkiach Minachalonos. So Kadosh Baruch Hu continues to watch us. But Hester Pana means sometimes we can't tell that Kadosh Baruch Hu is watching. Sometimes we don't fully feel the divine care, the divine concern, the divine Hashkacha. It still is there. It's just sometimes harder to notice. So you think about Rehuven ben Maseira, he was only a human being. And yet he was able to take care of things from a distance and protect his co-religionists in Yerushalayim from a distance. And here we are on Zoom, and we're continuing the Migra Rehuven ben Maseira to communicate from a distance and to share Torah from a distance and to care for each other from a distance. And it's worth reminding ourselves that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is always taking care of us from a distance. And sometimes you see faces, sometimes you don't. Right? But even when you don't see a Kadosh, so to speak, we don't see a Kadosh Baruch Hu's face, we still know. You know, in the daytime, so to speak, we see HaKadosh Baruch Hu's chesed. We can speak in the day, in the morning, about his chesed. Emes v'yatzev. At night, emunascha b'alelos. Sometimes it's emes v'emuna. We don't always see, we don't always understand in the moment how HaKadosh Baruch Hu is taking care of us. And we know that it's happening. That even if he's not mashkiach manachalonos, he is still meitzitz menacharakim. So we should continue to seek to feel the warmth of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even when it requires more careful looking. And we should seek to continue to be in touch, as I was saying before. If the guys are interested in doing this again over the course of Chol Hamoed, I would be thrilled.